welcome to UBS's Top of the Morning podcast. 2020 has been a challenging year in many respects, including for the U.S. energy sector. So today, we're going to break down for you the factors behind sector performance, what a path forward looks like, and how you should think about positioning within the space, considering the many unknowns that still lie ahead of us. Joining me here on the line for the conversation today, pleased to welcome back Nikki Decker. Nikki, as you know, is the energy analyst for the Americas, as well as Jay Dobson, the MLP and energy infrastructure analyst for the Americas, both from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Nikki and Jay, it's great to be with you both as always. Looking forward to our conversation, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Dan.
Yep, thanks, Dan. Nice to be here.
Absolutely. And Nikki, Jay, I know you recently both co-authored a publication, title of which is It Time to Get Overweight the Energy Sector? And that publication is available now for UBS clients up on UBS Online Services, though they can also contact their financial advisor directly if they would like to receive a copy of the publication. Though looking forward to discussing some key conclusions outlined within that piece, perhaps we can begin by discussing how we got to where we are today. Jay, I know on a year-to-date basis, both the energy and energy infrastructure sectors, they're among the worst sector performers within the broader market. Can you outline for us, Jay, the factors at play that have challenged the group throughout 2020?
Yeah, Dan, definitely. It's a great question. You know, as Nikki and I always point out, it's really important to look back. We always want to spend a lot of time staring forward, but your frame of reference is always informed by what happened. And as you point out, it hasn't been pretty for the S&P energy sector. Down about 50% year-to-date on a total return basis as of this morning. You can compare that to the S&P 500 up about 7. But we really try and look back. You know, obviously the pandemic had an impact on demand. I think that's sort of the first impact you would see and cite as far as the relative performance. That decline in demand, which happened very precipitously in March and April, in fact, much, much faster than supplies could react, drove to a significant increase in crude oil inventories globally. So you have declining demand, rising inventories. And then we can't really forget that we also had a little mismanagement of supply by OPEC Plus in early March, which led to increased supply just about the time that demand was falling off pretty dramatically. So not only did you have demand declining and supply roughly stranded, we had supply actually going up for a short period of time. So really, when you look at it, a couple of issues, supply mismanagement by OPEC Plus, and then the impact of the pandemic were probably the key drivers. I think it'd be an incomplete answer, though, to say, and hopefully we'll have some time to talk about this later, to at least cite, you know, investors, you know, greater focus on ESG and sort of the impacts of eventually moving towards a lower carbon economy. Clearly weighs on investors' minds. I think that's a second or third derivative. Clearly the fundamental issues I mentioned first were really the drivers, but I think there is a lower level of investor interest, which is driving part of the underperformance, or perhaps maybe the lack of recovery from that underperformance in the nearer term.
Jay, to your point on ESG becoming more of a point of interest and application, so definitely want to revisit that a bit later in the conversation. But Jay, thank you for outlining how we got to where we are today. Maybe on a going forward basis, we can receive a bit of an outlook. So Nikki, to that point, I know the Chief Investment Office, as of today, maintains a neutral stance on the U.S. energy sector. Yet within the report, you talk about reasons to believe that 2021 might yield conditions that are perhaps conducive for a turnaround in energy sector performance. What exactly, Nikki, will you be watching out for next year?
So that's true, Dan. We are neutral on energy due to really just the near-term uncertainties, many unknowns. You know, the nearest one would be the upcoming U.S. presidential elections, but also some concerns around the pace of recovery in oil demand. We're still some 8 million barrels a day below a year ago. That's a, you know, that's still a very, very large gap, even though we've come a long way. But, you know, that all said, in the longer term, in addition to some of the macro tailwinds that we foresee, we do see also, Dan, some structural improvement in the financial and fundamental health of the industry. We know this sector is very out of favor. And the downturn has really caused the U.S. Energy industry and management teams across the entire industry to really home in on the essentials and to give energy investors what they want, which is cash returns. So we're seeing an increasing number of energy operators sort of formally pledging to maintain an austere investment framework, even as oil prices recover. And then excess cash flow will be returned to shareholders. And, you know, this has two implications. First of all, the more disciplined spending approach going forward, you know, could well translate to a more moderate pace of production growth in the U.S. So that is a healthy macro indicator. Also, on the cash returns, I mean, a competitive free cash yield could make investment in energy equities more attractive to investors relative to the broader market and might improve sentiment a little bit. But, you know, there's still some concerns among investors. First of all, you know, it remains to be seen whether operators are going to stick with their austerity budgets, their stated plans. In addition, you know, there are other factors, you know, sort of looming here. Transition to a lower carbon economy is well underway. And then there's always the question of whether there will ever be a full recovery in crude oil demand post-COVID. So, you know, the U.S. energy industry, at least for now, may need to step up the investment case. You know, we're seeing energy equity cash yields to shareholders above the market currently, but, you know, still with limited investor interest. We may need to see those cash yields moving higher to an even greater premium. And that's going to require, Dan, some recovery in oil prices, and we think as well some improved capital efficiency among the operators.
Now, Nikki, sticking with the scenario where 2021 yields stronger economic growth, both here in the U.S. and abroad, so perhaps that includes more commuting, more travel, people getting into their cars, hitting the road as they did back in 2019, how, Nikki, might that translate to crude oil demand?
Yeah, you know, so that's our base case. We're seeing, you know, we're anticipating further recovery in crude oil demand, even though we've come a long way. I think, you know, a lot of that focuses on a recovery in the economy. But, you know, recovery in the economy hinges at least partially on the availability of a vaccine. And, you know, I mean, for crude oil, that will also drive you know, an increase in mobility, as you alluded to. You know, people may start traveling once again, not only commuting to their office, but also air travel. And air travel is what is still very depressed. So, you know, we await the vaccine and certainly look forward to economic recovery. That is our house view, that we will see some improvement in the economy as the months pass here. But, you know, until that time, we could see oil prices trading kind of sideways. Next year, we see a nice recovery in oil prices. Our view is that, you know, we could see mid to high 50s for West Texas Intermediate in the half second half of next year. You know, and again, this assumes a pickup in global crude oil demand, hinged on, you know, economic strength and also on the COVID vaccine. And also on the supply side, ongoing discipline, both in the U.S. and within OPEC.
Thank you, Nikki. On a more near-term basis, Jay, it's hard to believe that Election Day, it's less than a week away, and as our colleague Tom McLaughlin outlined in the most recent Election Watch publication, The Home Stretch, it might be a contested outcome. A week from today, we might not know what the outcome is, though. Jay, can you remind us of the risks, implications associated with a certain outcome scenarios to the energy space?
Yeah, Dan, you know, obviously energy has been at the forefront of investor considerations around the election, so much so that it was a major highlight within that Election Watch piece that you point out was published just last Friday. But I think in summary, investors have broadly decided, you know, a Biden win is negative for energy and a Trump win is positive for energy. I think both Nikki and I would argue it's far more nuanced than that. While there are risks for the energy industry in a blue wave scenario, we both believe they may be tempered by practical limitations to making sweeping changes given the fragile state of the U.S. economy. I mean, when you think about it, economic stimulus, priority one, probably renewable energy, a second priority, but beyond a moratorium on new leases for fossil fuel exploration on federal lands, you know, we expect most energy risks will stem from regulatory policy rather than congressional action. I think the other thing to keep in mind with this, Dan, is, you know, what's priced in. You know, certainly given the Election Watch, our house view is the odds favor a Biden win. And I think energy, given the performance I cited early in this discussion, has been negative in part as investors prepare for that. But I think when you look at it, you know, arguably there's probably a little more balanced view of what may happen, particularly given an early focus on economic stimulus. So, you know, it's probably going to be interesting to watch. God, there's going to be so much stuff that'll be interesting to watch over the next several weeks. But, you know, my guess is once investors wake up here, regardless of the outcome, they may begin to feel a little more comfortable.
Thank you, Jay. And look forward, once we have an outcome, would be great to have both yourself and Nikki back on to have a follow-up conversation and talk about what the outcome means for the sectors on a going forward basis. But I do want to revisit a point, Jay, you brought up earlier. Nikki, I know ESG, so that's environmental, social, and governance, those considerations, those practices, they're becoming more mainstream. They're becoming more expected and demanded by investors in the energy space. What does Nikki timeline look like for a transition to a lower carbon economy? And what role will U.S. energy and energy infrastructure companies be playing throughout this process? Will they have a seat at the table to drive and forward this transition?
You know, that's a really important question. I'm glad you asked it, Dan. You know, we are seeing the E portion of ESG really starting to move up the priority list for energy investors, and, you know, certainly will, you know, come further into focus should we get that blue wave outcome in the upcoming elections. You know, at the moment, given all that we do know, there are many unknowns, but everything that we do know, including you know, some of these technologies that are emerging, government policies that are in place, you know, the global energy sector is transitioning, and it will transition from fossil fuel based to zero carbon by the second half of this century. So, you know, what we don't know is the pace at which this will all evolve. You know, again, we incorporate what we know And you know, we see a a rather measured pace of transition, a rapid but measured pace of transition. But you know, given that there are still so many unknowns, you know, a lot could change. And I can tell you, as we speak, the transition is accelerating. So there's no question about the direction that the industry is heading. So, you know, to your question on the role of this industry in the future, I think in terms of U.S. Oil and gas operators, you know, a number of them have already articulated plans to transition alongside the world and the industry. For instance, refiners are investing in renewable biofuels plants. Services companies are developing offerings to help build out new infrastructure and renewable production plants. You know, natural gas will likely remain in the picture. It's a relatively low carbon fuel. So, you know, services for that industry will be ongoing. And production as well. But, you know, the major oil companies, you know, they do plan to participate in the transition. And they've been investing in research and development for, you know, important technologies such as carbon capture, biofuels. The only subsector that, you know, have a few options from what they're currently doing is exploration and production. And that, you know, they might be challenged. None have expressed intentions of transitioning away from oil and gas production. So, you know, I'm sure they're thinking about it, but haven't made any commitments thus far. But the question for those who are looking at transitioning, at least at some point, is when to invest in commercial scale development and production. When? You know, because the focus is on rates of return. And for now, you know, we haven't seen the U.S. majors investing in a meaningful way in renewable energy production. Now, that's in contrast to the European counterparts who have begun to invest in a meaningful way. But, you know, I'm confident, Dan, that it's just a matter of time, and I expect all the larger globally diversified U.S. energy companies to participate in the transition and to be key energy providers on some level, whatever that kind of energy may be. But I think that's what we're going to see going forward well into the future.
Thank you, Nikki. More to come and more to follow up on. So as we're coming to the conclusion of our conversation today, perhaps we can end on positioning. So, Jay, when it comes to investing in the U.S. energy and energy infrastructure sectors, what should investors be focusing on today?
Yeah, Dan, it's ultimately the most important question. Energy is a traditional cyclical sector, and what I mean by that is activity or earnings growth in the sector is largely driven by the pace of economic activity. So, you know, in the first instance, as Nikki pointed out earlier, a vaccine is likely going to be an important element to seeing better energy performance. You know, potentially post-election, some additional economic stimulus from the federal government to drive faster economic activity in 2021. So we sort of first have to see economic improvement that would drive a cyclical improvement in earnings and economic growth, because that's going to help industries like energy. Now, our house view favors industrials and financials, traditional cyclical sectors, over energy, but certainly energy will have better performance in 2021 than 2020 if we have, you know, better better economic growth. Now, most people listening will say that's not a very high bar, given the performance that we cited earlier, the very negative performance of energy year to date. But I really do believe that first, accelerating economy will be a very, very important element to see to lead to higher energy prices, primarily crude oil, and then ultimately better earnings for energy and energy infrastructure companies. But when we look then specifically, what should investors look for once we've gotten to that point? You know, Nikki and I are unanimous in our view. Stay focused on high quality names. And when I say high quality names, I measure that by strong balance sheets, economically and competitively advantaged assets, and perhaps most importantly, really strong managements. I mean, I do think one of the lessons we'll learn yet again, I feel like we've learned it a couple of times over the last several years, is in these difficult times in almost energy, any industry, but energy in specific, we really see the strong managements glow in more difficult periods. So definitely when you're looking at these companies, high quality names, strong balance sheets, competitively advantaged assets, and strong management.
Jay and Nikki, it's always great catching up, and do appreciate all of the ground that you've covered with us today. I know the conversation will continue. As you've outlined, the energy sector is poised to evolve in a big way in the years to come, though appreciate today the insights into what has driven sector performance over these past several months, what the year ahead might have in store, and how to think about positioning within the space. So as I mentioned earlier, definitely looking forward to a follow-up conversation near term post the election. That would be terrific. But Nikki and Jay, thank you again. Appreciate the time this morning.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Dan.
And again, today we've been joined by Nikki Decker, energy analyst for the Americas, as well as Jay Dobson, MLP and energy infrastructure analyst for the Americas, both from the UBS Chief Investment Office. So again, I do want to point out to our listeners and especially our clients of UBS, Nikki and Jay have been referencing this morning their recent co-authored publication, Is It Time to Get Overweight the Energy Sector? So that publication, again, available for you now up on UBS Online Services. I do want to point out to our clients, please just reach out to your financial advisor. Your financial advisor can provide you with a copy of that publication directly. Top of the morning. We'll be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.